It often happens as we make our way through the liturgical year that we get more than we can eat. It's a banquet. Maybe that's every day, but I notice it today because we have three points to ponder, which any one of them could take up the whole day. One being today's feast, the Feast of the Presentation of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Secondly, the inspiring example we heard about in the first reading, Eleazar, the 90-year-old man of faith. And then in the Gospel, the conversion of Zacchaeus. They're all great. Let's say a little bit about today's feast. It's an unusual Marian feast. We know that there are different categories of Marian feasts. Since this is a Marian shrine, it's good to review this. There are feasts that celebrate events of Mary's own life, her life on earth. So you think of her birthday, probably the easiest example, but then also the Immaculate Conception, the Assumption, things that took place, Our Lady of Sorrows, things that took place while she was here on earth. Then there are Marian feast days that are associated with apparitions. So Guadalupe, Lourdes, Fatima, the obvious ones. Then there are Marian feast days that are associated with devotion. Our Lady of the Rosary comes to mind. Or devotions that are associated with different shrines, you know, Our Lady of Manawag or something like that. And then there's today's feast, presentation. Now, it seems to be associated with an event in Mary's earthly life because it's implying that as a child she was brought to the temple. But most people say that probably didn't happen, so it leaves the feast kind of without, it's like pulling the rug out from under the feast. If it didn't happen, how can you have a feast day in honor of the presentation? Well, we don't know that it didn't happen. It depends on what we mean by it. If you look at some religious artwork, you can see the presentation of Mary is represented as something like what happened to Samuel when he was a boy. He was brought to the holy place. There was no temple in those days, but he was brought to the shrine, and his mother left him there to remain there in the presence of the Lord and to serve. Well, that certainly didn't happen to Mary because he didn't leave little girls in the temple. In fact, some of those artworks that come out of the 18th, 19th century, which show Joachim and Anne at the bottom of the stairs and Mary walking up the stairs and then some old man at the top of the stairs, showing, you know, Mary entering into the temple. In modern times, those look kind of creepy because the idea of young girls and old men and, you know, all the scandals, That just doesn't work anymore, that kind of imagery. But if we want to show Mary as the perfect disciple, then we would look not to Samuel as the model, but to Jesus. And Jesus was presented in the temple when he was 40 days old. He wasn't brought to the temple to live there. He was presented to the Lord to show, well, that was the law. A boy had to be redeemed. That was what it was called. I don't think girls had to be redeemed, but maybe there was a tradition where if there was a devout family, they would bring a girl and make a sacrifice to show that this child also belongs to the Lord. We don't know any of that. There's no evidence of it. So why do we have a feast like this? Because it represents Mary's total dedication to God from beginning to end. It represents Mary as the one who belongs to the Lord. She's the example of what it means to be dedicated or presented to the Lord. With that in mind, that Mary, of course, is the mother of all of us and the model for all of us, we can also see the wisdom of the church. The church has celebrated this feast for centuries, so it's not as if it's an empty feast. It's something that has deep roots. But this feast is put at the end of the liturgical year as if to show us what the church is supposed to be. Mary is the perfect model of the church. Mary presented to the Lord is a sign that the church is presented to the Lord. The church is 100% for the Lord. And at the end of time, when Jesus comes again, what will be given is every kingdom and the church, and everything will be presented to the Lord for a total dedication to Him. So that's sometimes how it's understood. Well, this idea of total dedication is connected to today's first reading and the marvelous story of Eleazar, one of the foremost scribes. This is from the book of Maccabees now, second book of Maccabees, but still those historical records of the time when the Jews were under severe persecution by the Greeks. And Eleazar is at 90 years old, being forced to violate the law. He refuses. He refuses to violate the law. They give him an out. He can pretend. He can eat the food that's legitimate and pretend that it's the food of the sacrifice. He says, no way. I'm not going to pretend. That's a great example. No, he's not just someone who looks good, who looks holy. He's holy through and through. He's wholly dedicated. He's not a hypocrite. And he won't let any part of his example, his life, be an occasion for sin for others, especially for the young. So he's held up as a great example, and he is a great example. Here's a man who's willing to die rather than sin, who's willing to die rather than even to look like he sins. So a holy man. Notice that the holiness of Eleazar is focused first of all, or the inner life of Eleazar is focused first of all on the Lord, faithfulness to God. And it says he was faithful to God from his childhood. But it's not only love of God, it's also love of neighbor. He has a concern for young people, which is right. The elders are examples to the young. And he said, if I were to pretend to eat the unlawful meal, I would scandalize the young people. They would think that that was okay. That it was okay to violate the law, to abandon the religion. You see what stands out here is Eleazar, in contrast to those who are urging him to participate in the unlawful sacrifice. They're willing to do anything just for their own advantage. And he's not. They used to be friends. Well, he was probably considered like a venerable Lolo, you know, a person that you look up to because he's an older person. But once he makes his stand for the Lord and for the law, then they say, wait a minute, this man is no longer a venerable old man that we can respect. Now we're going to have to punish him. See the contrast. And this is what happens when someone stands for truth, young or old. Eventually, he or she will find opposition and persecution. What are we supposed to do in times of persecution? Remain faithful to God. Remain faithful to the law of love of God and love of neighbor. It's never a loving thing to pretend to be good and violate the will of God. It doesn't benefit anyone to go against the will of God. Okay, so here he is, a great model. It says he died, leaving in his death a model of courage and an unforgettable example of virtue, not only for the young, but for the whole nation. And since it's here in the scriptures, he's an example for the rest of the time. I said yesterday that these books of Maccabees are not in the Protestant Bibles, so they don't have this great example. That's too bad, because this really is an inspiring story. When we come to the gospel, we realize there's more inspiring examples. There's more than the holy people of God who have always been good from their childhood. The Abrahams and the Davids and the great ones of the old law, the chosen ones. Here's Zacchaeus, who's a lawbreaker, who's a betrayer of his own people. He's a tax collector and he's made a lot of money doing it. But we learn, I won't go into the whole story, but we learn at the end, Jesus says, this man too is a descendant of Abraham. This man is also someone whom I have come to seek out and save because he was lost. So we realize in the New Testament, something even greater is revealed. Not only is God favoring those who are faithful to him, but God is also merciful to those who haven't been faithful, but are willing to be converted. So Zacchaeus is an example, not of faithfulness for his whole life. Mary is faithful for her whole life. Eleazar, as far as we know, faithful his whole life. Of course, he was a sinner, but he was not a blatant sinner. And then there's Zacchaeus, who was not a faithful man. He was not even a religious man, as far as we know, but something sparked curiosity in him. He had a little bit of openness to try to figure out who's this Jesus who happens to be passing through Jericho. And he experiences the grace of Jesus coming to his house. So Jesus didn't come to save the righteous. He didn't come for people who are already healthy. He came for sinners, came for the sick people. He came for the lost children of Abraham and the lost in the world. It's even more inspiring because we see the will of God is not just to reward goodness, but to welcome back those who are willing to humble themselves, turn away from sin. Who gets the credit for Zacchaeus's conversion? It looks like Zacchaeus takes the initiative to climb the tree. But it also looks like Jesus is the one who looked up and said, I'm going to your house. He invited himself to Zacchaeus' house. Well, it's both. It's this collaboration of man with God. God always takes the initiative, but he never forces himself. So he provides a grace. When someone opens himself to the grace, then God can take another step. And when someone welcomes that next step, then God gives more, and this is how it is. It's a growing process to the point where there's communion, there's union, eating the sacred meal in Zacchaeus's house, not the unlawful meal that was being forced on Eleazar, but sharing at the table of Jesus himself. So this collaboration. This is just to reinforce what we learned on Sunday when we heard about the parable of the talents. If we use what we're given, we get more. If we respond to grace, we get more grace. If we're willing to go beyond ourselves, God will go beyond himself and give us more. That's the process. That's why Zacchaeus' little step to climb the tree, it was an opening for Jesus to do more. But if ever we bury our talent under the ground, if we refuse to cooperate with God, if we take the road that those opponents of Eleazar took, well then we lose what we have. We lose what little we have. We're either growing in God because God is giving us more and more, or we're shutting the door and losing what little we have. Zacchaeus, to his credit, he opens himself to the grace of conversion, and he gives away half his possessions. He doesn't need all his money anymore because he has the Lord. I give half my possessions to the poor. What do I need all that for? See, the profound conversion. Okay, so with the example of Mary and the intercession of Mary on this her feast day, and with the inspiring example of Eleazar and of Zacchaeus, let us go forward in our own pilgrimage to the temple, to the house of the Father.